Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 142 of The Great Escape Minute, the daily podcast where we dig into The Great Escape 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Joe Amade, Great Escape historian, film buff, and president of Virgil Films. And if you want to know what Virgil Films, why it's named Virgil Films, you can listen to yesterday's episode where Joe actually explained that to us. So, welcome back to the show, Joe.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I hope you had fun yesterday. I did.
I had a blast.
And we shall continue today with episode 142. So episode 142 begins with Kuhn turning around and goes all the way till we get to see Ashley Pitt take his final breath.
Yes.
So as we were discussing yesterday, the train stopped in the station. We're not sure exactly what station it is. Roger and Mac get off the train with a whole bunch of extras, and then they keep walking, and then they happen to be with other extras, and then they continue walking, and they're back with the first extras, and then they continue walking, and they're with other extras. So, and at the same time, we have Kuhn looking at a bunch of extras, and then looking at a different bunch of extras, and then once again, and so on and so forth. Everyone who's listened to the episode yesterday knows what we're talking about. So we continue with that, with Kuhn looking around for someone who will stand out among all of these departing train passengers, because he's looking, apparently, for someone who has escaped from a German prison camp, probably hundreds of miles away. That would be my assumption. I don't know how far, but if you're taking a train, they're probably not just taking it's probably not a short trip.
No, I don't. I'm not even sure it's described, or is it described in the film? Where is the train going?
Nope, it's going nowhere.
It's heading to Berlin.
Maybe it's going to the Russian front.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Because as we know, they got the information about the train from Werner, and you know Werner's always talking about to the Russian front. So
yeah, that's true. You're
he
right.
Knows how to get there. He actually had a ticket. When we discussed this months ago, when they were going through his wallet, he had a ticket to some remote place, which was like 600 miles away or something like that. Some crazy,
yeah,
really far away.
Poor Werner. Robert Graf, is that how you pronounce his name?
Yes, Robert
Graf. He passed away pretty quickly after the film.
Yeah, apparently he was suffering from cancer at the time of the filming, from what I understand.
Oh, okay.
I think he died like 2 years later or something like that.
Yeah. What a great character, though.
I've had my issues with him. He's a great character, but I think they should have found someone much younger to play him.
He does give up quite easily when he loses the wallet.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
No, but he's also, based on the conversations, he sounds like he's someone who should be a lot younger.
Yeah.
You know, I had this discussion a long time ago about the whole fact that he was talking about how he was in the Boy Scouts and then was transferred to the Hitler Youth. And, you know, if he's supposed to, so he's supposed to be in his early 20s at this point, but Robert Graf was I think 40 or 39 when he made this movie. And at one point, Garner says, you know, that Werner, he's a mixed up kid. And I think Werner is, Robert Graf was, I think, 10 years older than Garner. So it's just funny that Garner would say, make a comment, they would have his character make a comment like that.
Yeah.
So we get to see Kuhn looking around. He doesn't look as if he finds anyone very suspicious here looking around. So he just like turns around and decides that he's gonna maybe leave. You know, he's seen everyone go around. And then we get a quick shot of Ashley Pitt, you know, looking back and trying to see what Kuhn is actually doing. And then we get a wide shot where we actually get to see the two of them in the same shot. So it means this was filmed together. You know, this wasn't a pickup shot like a lot of the others that we've been discussing in this train station. We can see the way that Ashley Pitt is eyeing Kuhn. It's interesting that he recognizes Kuhn. You know, that he knows who he is.
Nothing earlier in the film.
He saw Kuhn show up when they brought Roger. But, you know, to see a Gestapo officer fleetingly, you know, get out of his car and go into the commandant's office, and then maybe you see him come out 10 minutes later and get in the car.
Yeah.
That's about it. So to have him recognize Kuhn specifically is strange, but he does realize that this is a Gestapo officer regardless, that's getting suspicious about something.
Yeah.
So at this point, Ashley Pitt actually starts walking towards Kuhn. Keeps his distance, but still looks at him in a very suspicious way, eyeing him to see what he's looking at. Because, as we know, Ashley Pitt is aware of the fact that Roger and McDonald are further ahead. And then we get a shot of Roger and McDonald standing in line again. And as we mentioned yesterday, the guy with the backpack is now a younger guy, even though before he was an older guy. Then we get to see one of the Gestapo guys checking the guy with the backpack. There was a lady with a scarf on her head that somehow disappeared. She somehow, you know, used a little black magic and, you know, disappeared because she also was escaped from a war prison camp, prison war camp. Maybe. I don't know. Then, you know, as we see them standing in line, we get another shot of Kuhn, who actually now seems to have a little more recognition on his face. He seems to see something. He moves in a particularly interesting way, because he moves back and forth looking, trying to figure something out, and then he realizes that he's not imagining something. He really has seen someone that he knows. And we see his face actually lighten up. He brightens his look.
He's happy.
He's very happy. This is how you get a Gestapo guy happy, I guess.
That's right.
And then we once again get to see Roger and Mac still standing in line. There's someone in front of them that's actually being checked. This guy actually has a green hat, but in the previous shot, there was a different guy that had a blue hat that was in front of him. It's very interesting they were really bad at this, at the continuity here. There's no question about it. And then we see Roger and Mac pull out their passports, or their permission to, what's it called, a Reichstag? I think that's what they called it.
Yeah.
Where the documents that they're allowed to, you know, travel around in. So they take it out, and then we get another shot of Ashley Pitt looking back and forth. And I love the way that they show him looking to the right, looking to the left, looking to the right, yeah, looking to the left. You know, he's doing a double take, but he's doing it slowly.
Nobody sees him doing that either.
No, nobody sees him doing it, and he actually now sees. Now, I love in this shot where he's looking, we see just elderly people getting off the train. At this point, you know, everyone's got a cane. You have three people coming out that all have canes, one after the other. I guess it's the opposite of what, you know, we have nowadays. You know, when you get on a plane, so the first people to get on and off are the people who need assistance. Apparently in Germany, the people who need assistance have to wait.
Well, it's Germany.
They should be glad that they're told to wait, as opposed to other things. Then we once again get to see Kuhn again, and he is looking, and then he says out loud, which is very strange. He screams, Bartlett.
Bartlett, yeah.
Gesundheit, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
Then we get to see Ashley Pitt notice that he actually... No one else hears him say Bartlett, but Ashley Pitt, who has apparently amazing hearing, even though
Bartlett doesn't hear him say Bartlett.
That's right. He's 10 feet away from Kuhn, or maybe a little more, and he hears him say Bartlett, and then jumps into action. And I love how he puts his hand on the train and launches himself off from the train at Kuhn. And Kuhn, at this point... he notices it, or he hears the sound and turns pretty quickly. He has a great reaction time. There's no question about it. And then the two of them, Ashley Pitt throws down his bag and newspaper and basically pushes Kuhn down onto the ground. It's just funny the way that this is done.
Hans Reiser was a pretty big guy, and McCallum is not. But he very easily gets him onto the ground.
Yes, but he also gets his gun out really quickly. You can see him pull out his gun as soon as Ashley Pitt gets to him.
Yeah.
You know, and then he knocks him down and tries to manipulate the gun in order to, you know, get it to point at Kuhn, and quickly does it. He's pretty effective and efficient here with what he does.
Yes.
He's able to take the gun and just... You know, the funny thing is his finger isn't even on the trigger. Kuhn's finger's on the trigger. So he's able to get Kuhn basically to shoot himself.
Yes,
he does. Diverts his hand so that he shoots himself. But it's a bloodless shot because apparently these are magic bullets that don't make you bleed, but they still kill you. And he has this look of grimace on his face. You know, Hans Reiser does a nice job of faking, you know, being shot here. There's no question about it. And at this point, the shot rings out, makes a lot of sound. We hear screams in the crowd. And then we get a shot of everyone just quickly looking back, and including Roger and Mac. They're looking in that direction. And then Kuhn does his quick death lurch, where his arms just flail to the side. And like I said, no bullet. You probably can see an indentation in his jacket, so maybe there is some sort of bullet hole there. But there's absolutely no blood, even at a very close range shot. I hope never to have to, you know, deal with such a close range shot.
Right. I don't think you'll remember it.
Not in this lifetime, or not in this world. How's that? And then, like, I love how his head just, like, slumps to the side in a very dramatic way.
Very jerkingly way.
Yes. And Ashley Pitt at this point realizes that he's lost. So it looks like he's, like, fumbling in Kuhn's jacket to maybe, like, steal his wallet or something like that. He's, like, holding on to his jacket a little too long, and then he quickly gets up and starts sprinting off. And runs pretty fun in a funny way.
Yeah, he does.
It's an all-out run, but it's, you know, thankfully in most of his roles he hasn't needed to be an athlete. And then we get another shot of Roger and Mac looking in horror, watching everything that's going on. But obviously everyone who's standing and checking things in line, the German soldiers and the Gestapo, no longer care about Roger or Mac, and they all take off in the direction where Ashley Pitt was going. And then I like the fact that they show at this point Roger and Mac for a split second thinking about what they're supposed to do, and then they realize, okay, his sacrifice is for us. We better get out of here as quickly as possible.
Yeah,
they get out of there as quickly as possible, completely undetected, because nobody really cares. Then we get to see the SS officer. He barks through the crowd breaks through the crowd with another one of the officers. They end up raising their guns. And then he screams, I'm not going to... Again, my German is horrendous, so I will spare everyone to have to once again listen to me say German phrases. He basically says in English, everyone on the ground. Which is a very strange statement to say in a train station. You know... You're in a busy train station, and if you're there and someone screams, everyone get on the ground, I don't know how many people are going to react so quickly. You're going to wait for the first shot, I guess, or whatever. You know, think about if you're in Grand Central Station and someone just screams at everyone on the ground. Most people are going to say, who's this weirdo? You
know, yeah, exactly. What's going on?
And then he just shoots. And as I just said, shooting is what actually gets everyone to lie down.
Right.
And we even get to see people, you know, with canes, throw their canes on the ground, and quickly they're able to get on the ground really quickly at this point. Nobody is taking their time with that. So we get to see all the passengers jump or crouch to the ground, and then we get to see Ashley Pitt running down the train station area. Now, at the beginning, when you see him here, it reminds me of Chariots of Fire. You know, in the scenes where they're running inside of the university towards the beginning, where they have the race, you know, we see them just running down, and they're running through a crowd, and that's what it looks like to me, the way that Ashley Pitt, David McCallum, is running down pathway. You know, you have people on all sides, and he's just running, you know, giving his best. I don't know what he's thinking, like where he's trying to go with this. I think he knows that he's lost. He knows that he's sacrificed himself. Yeah,
there's nowhere to go with the run. But he runs in a very awkward fashion.
Yes. Yeah. And then we hear another shot ring out, and then we see him very dramatically pretend to get shot in the back.
Yes.
Which means that this guy has a pretty good shot, you know, all the way from the beginning to the train to the end of the train, and he's getting, you know, center mass. That's pretty good. And then he dramatically rolls onto the tracks and then tries to get up and picks himself up. Holding he's holding his belly, which is even stranger. You know, if he got shot in the back.
Yeah.
So, Maybe it went through, and maybe it was a lower back shot. You know, I'm not sure. And what's even funnier is not only is he holding his stomach, he's also still holding onto his glasses.
Yeah.
Now we know these glasses were completely a fabrication, because throughout the entire movie, he didn't have glasses until he was on the train pretending to be a German businessman.
But the glasses are integral to the death scene.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
And then he staggers across the train tracks. Luckily, he doesn't touch any third rails or anything like that along the way. And then he just, like, falls over onto his back. I mean, he falls in a very strange way also.
The positioning of his body is very strange.
Yes.
And then it's a close-up of his face.
Yeah, and he gets to still hold onto the glasses.
Yeah. You know,
and we get to see his watch that it looks like it's, I think it says it's like 5 o'clock or something like that. You know, as he falls down, basically we can see that he's dead. And now, what I found fascinating is we're talking about minute 142, and this is only the second death in the entire movie of a prisoner. You know, we had...
Oh, is that including Ives?
That's including Ives.
So this is the first death of an escaped prisoner.
Yes, correct.
Wow, and you're right, a minute, hour and 43 in.
No! It's 142 minutes. That means it's 2 hours and 22 minutes into the movie.
Wow.
We've 30 minutes left to this movie.
But that goes to show, though, the entertaining value or the whole scope of the film. You're not bored by this time. I mean, there aren't any slow portions of this film. You know, a lot of epics or films that run for 3 hours, you know, sometimes they have a 10, 12, 15-minute slowdown. That's amazing that first death happens that far into the film.
Yep. The first, I think Ives died in minute 93, if I remember correctly. I could be getting that wrong.
I mean, Ives's death is a definite change in the whole feeling of the film. You know, the one thing about The Great Escape is it's very lively, and obviously the McQueen character brings some comedic elements. It's written very well, his lines and stuff. But when Ives dies, from that moment on, it's serious shit.
Yeah,
it's really digging. It's McQueen getting out and coming back in to give the information, and then it's the actual escape itself. It takes a real dramatic turn after Ives dies. And yeah. Ives is such a likable character. You know,
yes.
First time seeing that film, it's really upsetting.
Yeah. Now, you probably don't know this, but in the original script, they have two other prisoners that run over to try to pull Ives down, and they also get shot. So in the original script...
I did not know that.
In the original script that was written, I think it was in April of 63, if I remember. April of 62, excuse me. The version that I have from April 26th, 62, there were three prisoners that were shot. And that brought up a whole other controversy in the film, because Ramsey then complains about the fact that they, you know, shot two prisoners that were trying to help the guards, basically. They were trying to stop someone from trying to escape, and they got shot. And he wanted it, you know, a full report and an investigation. I can understand why they took it out, but still... It would have changed things. You know, this is... I've listened to the commentary that's on the Criterion collection, but it's the original commentary from the Laserdisc where Sturgis talked about it, where, you know, I've mentioned this before, but the bottom line is that the company wanted Sturgis to cut the film. They said, it's too long.
Yeah.
You got to cut something. And so they told him that he should cut the scene... where Griffith is talking about how they made all the escape costumes. And so he cut that scene out, and then they were showing it for a whole bunch of executives. And then when they finished watching the movie, one of the executives walks over to Sturgis and says, this was such a great movie, but can you explain to me, where did they get all these clothes that they put on when they were when they escaped?
And
at that point, Sturgis went back to the executive that told him to take it out and said, it's going back in. Basically, this is a movie, and I think this is something that Sturgis also mentioned at the time, that I'm not trying to take credit for myself. I'm taking credit for remembering it. How's that? Where the movie is is built up via building blocks. And if you take out any of the building blocks along the way, everything's going to fall. Something will not make sense. So that's why they had so much trouble editing anything out of this film. Steve mentioned last week there were a few things that they were able to edit out. One of them was when we get a look inside the trunk that Cedric was carrying.
That apparently, I never knew that.
Apparently that was a scene that was filmed. Probably, I'm assuming it's lost. There, he
what
had
is
like,
inside the trunk?
He had like a pup tent, and I think he had a pillow. You know, he was going in style.
God.
So, yeah.
Wow. And that scene, going back to the eyes death scene, that, you know, the McQueen jump, or the McQueen action jump, the way he contorts his body to knock over the one soldier, is so cool that that's one of the scenes that makes his character, or makes his entire performance work.
Right. I mean, one of the things,
so cool.
One of the things that I
didn't see action scenes like that.
No, not at all. I mean, one of the things that I love about the character of Hiltz that I think I've discussed this at some point, but you haven't heard it. And since you're such a big fan of Hiltz, we'll talk a little bit about him since we don't get him in this week at all. But one of the things I love about him is the way that he starts off as a loner. He pretty much cares only about himself from the start.
Yes.
And throughout the course of the movie, he starts caring about other people, and he gets to the point where he's, you know, doing selfless things for everybody else instead of being selfish.
But that begins with Ives' death.
Yes, correct. No, that begins with his friendship with Ives.
His friendship with Ives, yes. Yes.
But when Ives dies, at that point, you're correct. He then completely changes and says, okay, I'm now going to be doing this for everybody, not just for Ives. Or I'm doing it for Ives in the name of Ives, yes, for everybody.
Yeah.
But it, you know, it's the type of idea that sometimes people say that if there's something that you don't want to do, and that you can't really commit to. So if you do it a little bit here and there, it might grow on you.
Yeah.
You know, you might become more involved in what you're doing if you're doing it bit by bit. And I think that's what happens with Hiltz throughout the course of the movie.
But his escape, his actual escape on the bike, he's by himself. He's not with anybody else.
That's correct. But he's not by himself because he's selfish. He's by himself because he knows that he can only trust himself.
And he can only, and his bike.
He's one of the only characters, obviously you can say maybe Ashley Pitt at this point also, but he's, and Sedgwick, very few of the characters didn't try and escape in pairs of what we get to see. You know, you see Roger and Mac together. Obviously you see Blythe and Henley together. You see
Willie and Danny.
You see Haynes and Nimmo are together.
Yeah.
Which that one, the interesting thing about the two of them is one of them gets shot and the other one gets sent back. Spoiler alert to anyone.
Yeah.
They actually get split up at some point. Cavendish also goes on his own. But my point is that a lot of them leave in pairs. What's nice is that even though McQueen is on his own, and I think he needs to be on his own because he wanted the motorcycle scene. You know, having someone, having Cavendish ride along in the, you know, in the sidecar,
not going to happen.
Wouldn't work.
He wanted to be on his own, and he wanted more lot. That's a whole other subject about McQueen in this film,
right?
And what he demanded and what he got.
Right. Maybe we can talk about that later in the week.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's a whole story within itself, but.
Yeah,
but David McCallum, I mean, you know, he was an accomplished actor at this point. He, you know, he had done a lot of small films. He had met Jill Ireland in the late 50s because he made two movies with her in a row. They got married. They were happily married. And he makes Billy Budd in the early 60s and becomes kind of a star. He goes on location with this movie, brings his wife. They're very good friends with Charles Bronson. She's pregnant. He has to leave for 3 days, and he goes to Bronson and says, can you look after my wife? And Bronson says, yes.
I'll look after her for the next 20 years.
And the next thing you know, a couple years later, they get divorced and she marries Bronson. McCallum gets married again in 67 and has a very wonderful, you know, marriage with a woman, and Bronson and Ireland stayed together until they both passed away, you know? So, you know, you got David McCollum, who's a little, you know, short, little kind of skinny guy. You wouldn't think of him as being a tough guy. And then you got Bronson, who is the opposite, you know, big, brutish, tough guy. And it's almost like there's, you don't have a shot, David.
Well, you know, you should go back and listen to my interview with McCallum from back in August.
I will.
He talks about this because I asked him before the interview if there are any subjects that he doesn't want me to go near. Obviously, I was referring to the whole Jill Ireland thing.
Yeah.
If when you listen to it, should I spoil it for you or not?
No, you can tell me, but I'm still going to listen to
right.
it. But
no, obviously. What he basically said was that his divorce from Jill Ireland was his own personal great escape.
Wow, there you go.
And then he said that he's been happily married for 52 years or something like that at this point. And he said that, you know, if he wouldn't have gotten divorced from Jill Ireland, he never would have met his current wife, who, as of recording, the two of them are still together.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So things work out.
Exactly.
You know?
Completely.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a great story behind the story, though.
Yeah, completely.
So wait, where do I hear? Where? Just tell me real quick. Where can I hear that interview?
You can just go back into the feed, and it was a special bonus episode that I put out in August. I think it was
terrific.
I think it was on August 28th.
Okay.
2021, between episodes 40 and 41, and right now we're at 143. So 142.
All right.
So go back 100 episodes, and you'll be able to listen to that bonus episode.
Well, this is great.
All right.
I'm having a blast doing this with you.
All right. So you want to come back in tomorrow and talk more about this?
Sure. Definitely.
All right.
Why not?
All right. So you want to once again tell people how they can get back in touch with you?
You can get in touch with me through my email, joe@virgilfilmsent.com, VirgilFilmsent.com. Or just go to virgilfilms.com, our website, and you can find me there too.
All right. Excellent. And, you can go to our website, thegreatescapeminute.com. Our Twitter account is greatescapemxm. Our Facebook group is The Cooler. And our email address is thegreatminute@gmail.com. So until tomorrow, tally-ho!
Tally-ho!